Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 12, Chapter 13, The Glories of Srimad Bhagavatam. Today's texts 3 through 9. We're going to do a lot of verse chanting today because there are a lot of verses, and the purport has several verses too. So we'll chant the first one, text 3, responsibly. The word meanings, Purana of the Puranas, Sankhya. Of the counting of verses, Sambhutim, the summation, Asya, of this Bhagavatam, Vachya, the subject matter, Prayojane, and the purpose, Danam, the method of giving as a gift, Danasya, of such gift giving, Mahatmyam, the glories, Pata Ade, of teaching and so on, Cha and Nibodhata, please hear. Purana Sankhya Sambhutim,
Purana Sankhya Sambhutim,
Asya Vachya Prayojane,
Asya Vachya Prayojane,
Danam Danasya Mahatmyam, Pata Deshcha Nibodhata, Purana Sankhya Sambhutim,
Purana Sankhya Sambhutim,
Asya Vachya Prayojane,
Asya Vachya Prayojane,
Danam Danasya Mahatmyam, Pata Deshcha Nibodhata, Purana Sankhya Sambhutim, Asya Vachya Prayojane, Danam Danasya Mahatmyam, Pata Deshcha Nibodhata,
Purana Sankhya Sambhutim, Asya Vachya Prayojane, Danam Danasya Mahatmyam, Pata Desha Nibodhata,
Purana Sankhya Sambhutim,
Purana Sankhya Sambhutim, Asya Vachya Prayojane,
Danam Danasya
Mahatmyam,
Pata Desha Nibodhata, Purana Sankhya Sambhutim,
Purana Sankhya Sambhutim,
Asya Vachya Prayojane,
Asya Vachya Prayojane,
Danam Danasya Mahatmyam, Pata Desha Nibodhata.
Purana Sankhya Sambhutim,
Asya Vachya Prayojane, Danam Danasya Mahatmyam, Pata
Desha
Nibodhata, Purana Sankhya
Sankhya Sambhutim
Asya Vachya Prayojane
Danam Danasya Mahatmyam
Bhagadesha Nibodhata.
Translation. Now please hear a summation of the verse length of each of the Puranas. Then hear of the prime subject and purpose of this Bhagavata Purana, the proper method of giving it as a gift, the glories of such gift-giving, and finally the glories of hearing and chanting this literature. Purport. Srimad Bhagavatam is the best of all Puranas. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that the other Puranas will now be mentioned, just as the assistants of a king are mentioned in connection with his glorification. So we can chant these together as well.
Brahmam Dasya Sahasrani Padmam Panchona Shastita Shri Vaishnavam Trayovinshat Chaturvinshati Shaivatam Dashasta Shri Bhagavatam Naradam Panchavinshati Markandam Navavanam Cha Dasha Pancha Chatushitam Chaturdasha Bhavishyam Syat Tata Pancha Chatani Cha Dashasta Brahma Vaishnatam Langam Ekadasaivatu Chaturvim Shativaraham Ekashiti Sahasrakam Skandam Shatam Tatachaitam Vamanam Dasukirtitam Karmam Sapta Dashakyatam Matsyam Tattu Chaturdasha Ekona vinshat sauparnam Brahmandam dvadashaivatu Evam purana sandohas Chaturlaksha sudharata Tatrashta dosha sastram Sri Bhagavatam ishvate.
Translation. The Brahma Purana consists of 10,000 verses. Actually, as we read this, you can think, what if we had to read all of these and study them? The Brahma Purana consists of 10,000 verses, the Padma Purana of 55,000, Sri Vishnu Purana of 23,000, the Shiva Purana of 24,000, and Srimad Bhagavatam of 18,000. The Narada Purana has 25,000 verses, the Markandeya Purana, 9,000. The Agni Purana, 15,400. The Bhavishya Purana, 14,500. The Brahmavivarta Purana, 18,000. And the Linga Purana, 11,000. The Varaha Purana contains 24,000 verses. The Skanda Purana, 81,100. The Vamana Purana, 10,000. The Kurma Purana, 17,000. The Matsya Purana, 14,000. The Garuda Purana, 19,000. And the Brahmanda Purana, 12,000. Thus, the total number of verses in all the Puranas is 400,000. 18,000 of those, once again, belong to the beautiful Bhagavatam. Purport. Srila Jiva Goswami has quoted the Matsya Purana as follows. So we can chant along also with this if you like. Ashtadasha Puranani Kritva Satya Bhati Sutaha Bharatakyanam Akilam Chakretar Upabringhitam Lakshanaikena Tat Proktam Vedartha Paribringhitam Vamikinapi tat proktam Ramopakyanam uttamam Brahmanabhihitam tatcha
Shatakoti pravishtarat ahritya naradenaiva vamikaya puna punaha vamikina chalokeshu dharma kamartasyanam evam cha pada panchayate vakshasteshu prapakirtitaha.
After compiling the 18 Puranas, so this is a verse from the Matsya Purana. After compiling the 18 Puranas, Vyasadeva, the son of Satyavati, composed the entire Mahabharata, which contains the essence of all the Puranas. It consists of over 100,000 verses and is filled with the ideas of the Vedas. There is also the account of the pastimes of Lord Ramachandra, spoken by Valmiki, an account originally related by Lord Brahma in 1 billion verses. That Ramayana was later summarized by Narada and related to Valmiki, who further presented it to mankind so that human beings could attain the goals of religiosity, sense gratification, and economic development. The total number of verses in all the Puranas and Itihasas, histories, is thus known in human society to amount to 525,000. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out that in the first canto, third chapter of this work, after Sutta Goswami lists the incarnations of Godhead, he adds the special phrase, Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. But Krishna is the original personality of Godhead. Similarly, after mentioning all of the Puranas, Sri Sutta Goswami again mentions the Srimad Bhagavatam to emphasize that it is the chief of all Puranic literatures. Om Ajnana Timirantasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurum Militam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. This chapter is the glories of Srimad Bhagavatam. We don't have Sanskrit titles, but it might be called the Bhagavat Mahatmya. We have different kinds of Mahatmyas. Mahatmya means the glories of the place, like Mathura Mahatmya. And there are Bhagavat Mahatmyas. In fact, in an upcoming article of BTG, we have an article, issue of BTG, we have an article by Satyaraj Prabhu of a section of the Padma Purana called the Bhagavat Mahatmya. And there it's described the travels of Bhakti Devi, how Bhakti Devi began in South India and then she moved north and she ended up in Vrindavan. So it's like a metaphor of how Bhakti Devi moved around in India. So this is from the Bhagavat Mahatmya. There are other Bhagavat Mahatmyas. So this is also a kind of Bhagavat Mahatmya, glorification of the Srimad Bhagavatam, like the title of this chapter, the glories of Srimad Bhagavatam. So in the context of glorifying Srimad Bhagavatam, we're hearing about these other Puranas. What's that noise? Glorification of the Bhagavatam. So today I'm going to speak some, I want to speak a little about the Jiva Goswami. Jiva Goswami glorified the Bhagavatam. Of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you know, in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, the introduction to the Bhagavatam, what did Srila Prabhupada do? He gave the whole biography of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the ideal preacher of the Bhagavatam. That's why that's there, is the introduction to the Bhagavatam, Lord Chaitanya's life. So, of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he introduced or he emphasized Srimad Bhagavatam is where we get our Shastra, our main Shastra, our main evidence. So Jiva Goswami, of course, he's our Siddhanta Acharya. He, especially among the Goswamis, he has presented the philosophy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in a very detailed way, very elaborate way, with his Bhagavat Sandarbha. So the title, this name, we also say Shat Sandarbha. Shat means six Sandarbhas. But the name is actually the Bhagavata Sandarbha, which means it's about the Bhagavatam. That's what the title means. Bhagavata Sandarbha means it's actually a commentary on the Bhagavatam. Now, Jiva Goswami has another commentary on the Bhagavatam, verse by verse, called the Krama Sandarbha. So in that sense, you can say he has seven Sandarbhas. But this is not a verse-by-verse commentary on the Bhagavatam, but it's, especially after the Tattva Sandarbha, then he, in each of his anuchetas are sections, or you might call them paragraphs, I suppose, long ones, he always takes a particular verse of the Bhagavatam, and then he speaks about that to make his points. So that his fundamental evidence, his pramana, is the Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is how he begins, actually, the Tattva Sandarbha. Actually, first I'll mention that there are six Sandarbhas again. And they deal with, because his way of presenting things, which is as taught by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as well, is that you have these divisions of knowledge. Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. So Sambandhas, you can actually think of this in the context of any kind of knowledge, but we see it in the context of studying the Vedic literature, or the absolute truth, tattva. Tattvam, paratattva, the absolute truth. Is that first you make a connection with your subject, sambandha. So in making that connection, you learn all kinds of theory, you might say, our philosophy of Krishna consciousness. And then sambandha, then abhideya, then you put it into practice. Just like if you're learning, say, to play the piano, so that you learn the, you have to learn the scale and so on, and how the notes are written. You have to learn how to read music and learn the basics. You practice. You get familiar. You start making your relationship with the piano, you might say. And then you practice and practice and practice and practice. That's the abhideya. So for us, of course, that's the practice of bhakti yoga. And then finally, prayojana, you become a master of the piano. If you practice enough, of course, that's the goal, ultimately, is you want to be able to sit down at the piano and play fluently, like a virtuoso. So, in presenting his Shat Sandarbha, Bhagavat Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami has also broken things up in this way. The first four books are about Sambandha. That's the Tattva Sandarbha, the Bhagavat Sandarbha, Paramatma Sandarbha, and Krishna Sandarbha. Those are about philosophy, you can say. The next one is the Bhakti Sandarbha, which is like kind of like the nectar of devotion. It's an extremely long Sandarbha. That's about Abhideya, the practice of Krishna consciousness. Or you might, in that sense, you might say it's also philosophy, but more specifically about, well, rasa, just like Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is. It's very similar in what it deals with. And again, the practices of Krishna consciousness. And finally, Prayojana. The Prayojana is the Priti Sandarbha. Priti Sandarbha is about, you know, the highest aspects of our philosophy, the relationship to Krishna and the gopis and so on. So in his Tattva Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami begins, he wants to establish Bhagavatam as the pramana, the main evidence for what everything else he's going to say. So how does he do that? He begins by discussing the other kinds of pramanas. Pramanas are ways that you understand things, how you get knowledge. So there are, I think he lists 10 of them, but we generally summarize them as three main ones, which is Sambandha Abhideya, Pratyaksha, Anuman, and Shabda. Pratyaksha literally means in front of your eyes, actually, is what it means. So it means what you get with your senses, pratyaksha. And anuman is inference. I think, actually, we use these things, too. In fact, there's a whole discussion. There's an appendix to the Sandarbhas, especially more with the early Sandarbhas. It's called Sarva Samvadini. So there, Jiva Goswami, they're kind of like expanded footnotes where he wants to talk about things specifically. So one of the things he talks about there is, you know, sometimes the question comes up. I remember thinking this early in Krishna consciousness, and I've heard people ask this question. Well, if our senses are imperfect, how can we get perfect knowledge by hearing, since our hearing is imperfect? So he talks about this. There's a very detailed technical discussion in the Sarvasambhadini where he talks about other schools of understanding Vedic knowledge and how they talk about phonemes. Phonemes means a sound, you can say, and how, you know, are they real or not? Are they eternal? And the different discussions are there. So in any case, as far as understanding the Vedas, he says actually our senses are imperfect through sense perception to try to understand this world. They don't work. But actually, they do work. Our hearing sense works for hearing the Vedas. This also comes up in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, the chapter called Prayers by the Personified Vedas. You know, that question is asked, well, how can we understand Brahman by hearing the Vedas when the Vedas are just ordinary sound? So essentially, the answer is, actually, they're not ordinary sound. And our ears, we have these human ears that Krishna has created for us so that we can hear that sound and we can actually get transcendental knowledge in that way. So in any case, so there are these three things. There's pratyaksha, which is just ordinary sense perception. There's inference. And then there's shabda. I often think how we actually use inference a lot, even ourselves, even in understanding. There comes to the point, we sometimes talk about this as philosophical speculation, you know. You just try to figure things out. Sometimes you hear them, you read them, but you can't quite put the pieces together. Just like, I think a nice example is this. If you ask different devotees to say everything they understand about karma, how karma works, and then you ask them, well, can you quote Shastra? Can you quote a verse to prove your point? Well, most of us can't. We can't point to it. We have an understanding of how it works, but we can't necessarily quote Shastra to prove it. It's sort of like we have a feel for it, you might say. Or Prabhupada explains it in different ways, but somehow in our own minds, we've inferred our understanding of putting all the pieces together. So we also, you can say, we use inference. But in an ordinary sense, especially the first two, pratyaksha and inference, to learn about, you know, the ultimate truth, Brahman, atato brahma jigyasa, that's the purpose of human life, to understand Brahman. What is Brahman? Brahman means the absolute truth. What is reality, you might say. So they fail, our ordinary senses and inference. So that gets Jiva Goswami to shabda. And then he says, so what is the... what is the solution to this? If we can't get knowledge just through our senses, so what do? Then he says we have to go to the Vedas. So of course for Westerners, this particular step is maybe difficult to accept. But we of course, Prabhupada would put it in simple words. If God himself speaks, that's how you get perfect knowledge. If the perfect person gives, he gives perfect knowledge, so you just have to accept it. And we say, of course, that it's coming through the Vedic scriptures especially. So this is what Jiva Goswami, this is one of his, this is text 10, or Anucheda 10 of the Tattvasandarbha. So first he says that these others are not reliable sources of knowledge. So he says, we want to understand that object which transcends everything, which is the shelter of everything, and whose wonderful nature no person can conceive or imagine. For this our source of knowledge can only be the Vedas. The Vedas consist of non-material sound, and they alone should be our pramana, because from them have issued all departments of knowledge, mundane and spiritual, among all schools of human thought since time immemorial. So this is his glorification. So he says we have to learn from the Vedas. So then there is some discussion about the Vedas and why... He quotes this verse, Tarka Pratishtana. This is from the Vedanta Sutras. Vyasadeva says, you can't get truth through argument. Because debate also, some people think that if you debate long enough, you're going to come up with a conclusion. But things that are inconceivable, you can't understand them just through logic and debate. And so he quotes similar verses like that. But then he says, here, this is text 12. We should consider the authoritative sound of the Vedas is impossible for anyone in present times to study completely. Its meaning is difficult to construe, And even the sages who have explained it in commentaries disagree with one another. For these reasons, we would be well advised to turn our attention to the Shabda Pramana of the Itihasas and Puranas, which are substantially non-different from the Vedas, and which definitively explain what the Vedas mean. So this is what he does. He moves. Said we should learn from the Vedas, but the Vedas are so difficult to understand, and they're not really available to us. There's a verse in the Kurma Purana. We know, of course, actually this is something that he discusses in this section of Vyasadeva divided up the Vedas in different parts. This is talked about in the Bhagavatam, that he gave, originally there was one Veda, and all the different mantras were there. So the priests, when they wanted to perform yajna, they're actually the four kinds of main priests in performing Vedic rituals. And those priests have to get there, they have different mantras to chant, and they're kind of spread all over the Vedas. So one of the things that Vyasadeva did was he separated them to make it easier, you might say, for the brahmanas to get the mantras that they need. And there's a verse about this in the 12th canto, which would have read, I think it's 12:6, if I remember correctly, where it says, what Vyasadeva did, he said, it's just like a rich man who has four different kinds of jewels. So he has them all mixed up in one pile, and then one day he decides to separate them into four different piles. So he takes the diamonds in one pile, and the rubies in one pile, and the sapphires in one pile, and so on. Separates them into four piles. This is what Vyasadeva did. And then he assigned each of these four parts to a different disciple of his. And then those disciples, they further subdivided them. There's a verse in the Kurma Purana that describes this. They further subdivided these four Vedas into 1130 different subparts. Not equally, I forget, there's like one of them was divided into 21 parts and one of them into 1,000 parts. I think that was the Yajurveda. So you have all of these different parts of the Veda, all of these books of the Vedas, each one that is quite extensive. And then each one of the Vedas is made of four parts. There are the Sanhitas, the Aranyakas, the Brahmanas, and the Upanishads. So that means you have to multiply. So now you're talking about 4,000. Those are just different parts of the Vedas. So they're not available, and who can study them? You know, traditionally in India, people still have their family name. They have like Trivedi or Chaturvedi. That means that traditionally, in their lineage, their ancestors, Brahmanas, they knew all, you know, if your name is Chaturvedi, that means somewhere in your past, your forefathers knew all four Vedas, had mastered them, or three Vedas, and so, or Dvivedi, also Dvivedi. So these extensive, of course, memorization was required to learn all these different mantras. The Sanhitas, Aranyakas, Brahmanas, and Upanishads. And there are discussions in different places of what these are all about. Of course, we're most familiar with the Upanishads because the Upanishads explain the philosophy, the jnana of section of the Bhagavatam. I mean the Vedas. So Jiva Goswami is saying the Vedas are just too difficult and too expansive, so all we have to do is study the Puranas now. And one nice thing about the Puranas, you know, the Vedas, when you chant the Vedas, they're done not only in a specific meter, which has to be exact, they're also in different tunes. You have to get the tone exactly right. And if you don't get the tone up, if you're tone deaf and you don't get the pitch exactly right, then you're in trouble. It doesn't work. And also the Sanskrit of the Vedas is more difficult. Vedic Sanskrit is different from the Sanskrit of the Puranas. The Sanskrit of the Puranas is called Laukika. Laukika means literally of the people. It's a spoken Sanskrit. It's more simple Sanskrit. It's easier for people to understand. It's just like for us today, we try to read Shakespeare. We may hear, oh, great, Shakespeare is so great, such a great writer. But you try to read him and you just scratch your head and say, well, I don't really understand, because his English is so different from our English today. So it's much easier to read a book written by someone who writes in our idiom and say how our language is spoken today. So the Puranas are like that. They're written in more the language more, even though it's Sanskrit, it's more accessible to people. So Jiva Goswami says, so therefore we should, it's better to study the Puranas. And then he quotes quite a number of verses that explain that the Vedas, that the Puranas are actually originally part of the Vedas. Because, you know, today, even today, there are, you know, puffed up scholars who say, oh, you only have to, only the Vedas are authoritative, only they're Shabda. But actually, Jiva Goswami points out in several verses that describe, even within the Vedas themselves, how the Puranas and Itihasas are the fifth Vedas. And they're identical because they're also eternal. That's the amazing thing. In fact, Jiva Goswami, he's making this point, which is quite a revolutionary thing. Actually, equating the Puranas with the Vedas is quite a revolutionary thing. But he's proving it by quoting from the Shastra that the Vedas, the Puranas are as good as the Vedas. Because some people, they'll only accept the Vedas. They say, yes, the Vedas are eternal, sound, apurusheya. This is really the idea. They're apurusheya. But the Puranas are also apurusheya. They also exist eternally. They coexist eternally with God. The Puranas do, as well as the original Shruti. So this is quite an amazing thing. So then Jiva Goswami explains, he said, well, the objection may be raised, but there's so many Puranas, and even they're not all available to us. And even the Puranas, they describe different things. Actually, there's and they worship different gods, demigods. So it becomes very confusing. So how can we, where do we turn? How do we get, if we want to get really authoritative knowledge, where do we turn? So he says, well, we turn to the Srimad Bhagavatam. And then he quotes different verses about how the Bhagavatam is complete. Actually, one interesting point about the Puranas in the arguments that Jiva Goswami is making about their validity, he says the word Purana, although Purana means old, so in that sense they're histories, but it actually, there's also the root Purana. Purana means to complete. So the Vedas actually, or the Puranas actually complete the Vedas. They complete it in the sense that they make the Vedas understandable, especially in Kali Yuga. They make the, because you can't really make heads or tails of them. Just like if you study the Vedanta Sutras. Now what there was an intermediate step, which I didn't discuss. He said someone may propose, well, we'll just study Vedanta. If we want to study Vedanta, we'll just study Vedanta Sutra. But he says, well, unfortunately, there are different interpretations, and most people can't understand the Vedanta Sutras anyway. If you just pick up the Vedanta Sutras on yourself without any commentary and try to understand them, you won't know what Vyasadeva is talking about. Because he's making allusions, he's referring to things that unless you're really a student of the Vedas, you won't know what he's talking about. So he's actually, for example, he's making a commentary explaining a particular verse that was traditionally a verse that was contentious, that different Vedic scholars disagreed about. He's presenting the solution to the argument. But unless you know, he might only take one word from that verse, but unless you know what that verse is the word is referring to, which verse he's referring to, you won't know what he's talking about. So it's hard to understand, Jiva Goswami says. It's difficult to understand the Vedanta Sutras. What are the Vedanta Sutras? They meant to be the Upanishads, as I was mentioning, the four divisions of the Vedas, one of those divisions is the Upanishads. And the Upanishads are called Vedanta because they explain the philosophy of the Vedas as a whole. So the Vedanta Sutras means they're sutras about the Upanishads. And that's it, Vedanta. They'd explain, the Vedanta Sutras explain the Upanishads. But because they're difficult to understand, then Jiva Goswami says, we can get the same information from the Puranas in a more easily understandable way. So then, of course, he glorifies the Srimad Bhagavatam. He says, and then there are many verses that explain the Bhagavatam. Now, how the Bhagavatam, it's in its own category. Just like we heard today in these verses, says it's like the Bhagavatam is the king, and these other Puranas are assistants to the king. The other thing about the Puranas that makes them difficult to understand today is that we only have bits and pieces of them, just like we have bits and pieces of the Vedas. The same with the other Puranas. Most of them don't exist completely. And whatever form they exist in, we can't, at least as Vaishnavas, we can't validate everything that's there. For example, the Bhavishya Purana, here it was mentioned, Bhavishya Purana is one of them that's mentioned here. I forget what it was, 12,000 verses, something like that. So there are places, even Jiva Goswami, he quotes the Bhavishya Purana, and Madhvacharya, he quotes the Bhavishya Purana, and some of our acharyas. So for our purposes, we only accept as actual verses from the Bhavishya Purana those that are quoted by our acharyas. Because the Bhavishya Purana is heavily interpolated. That means a lot of things were inserted. Especially when these things were put into writing, sometimes the scribes, they said, well, maybe we'll add a little something here. So there are sections of the Bhavishya Purana about Mohammed, for example, and there are verses about supposedly about Jesus. So there's question about whether those actually belong in the Bhavishya Purana. Sometimes devotees like to quote those, but all right, you can do that because probably no one's going to challenge you because nobody knows. But there's a good chance these things were just put in there. So there are a couple of Puranas that we accept as complete because Sridhar Swami wrote verse-by-verse commentaries on them. And that is the Vishnu Purana and the Bhagavat Purana. So that's how we know they're all the verses that we have. He went through, apparently he heard or he saw different manuscripts or he had heard different versions. And he, Sridhar, of course Sridhar Swami is the original commentator of the Bhagavatam, as Prabhupada refers to him. Actually, he refers to earlier commentaries, but their commentaries are no longer existing. So his is the earlier commentary that we have. And Jiva Goswami, right in the beginning of his Tattvasandarbha, he says, I'm going to quote the commentator. He often calls him just the commentator. And he means Sridhar Swami. He also refers to him by name. Sometimes he calls him Swami Pad. So Sridhar Swami. Because Lord Chaitanya said, you know, as he told Vallabhacharya, one who doesn't accept the Swami, I consider a prostitute. So he was really heavy, actually, with Vallabhacharya. He said, no. Because Vallabhacharya said, I wrote a better commentary than Sridhar Swami. So, not a good thing to say. So Lord Chaitanya accepted Sridhar Swami as authoritative. So Sridhar Swami has told us, in effect, that the Vishnu Purana is authorized and the Bhagavat Purana, Srimad Bhagavatam. So it has the Bhagavatam has stayed in its current state for a very long time, for hundreds if not thousands of years. Whereas others, we don't know. There could be interpolation, things added to it that aren't bona fide. Because people sometimes have impure motives, so they have their reasons for doing these kinds of things. So for us, that we can have that conviction that we're getting the Bhagavatam, the eternal Bhagavatam, which is Krishna himself. The Bhagavatam is, when Lord Chaitanya is presenting the Bhagavatam, he says that Krishna is there. I mentioned before in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, Lord Chaitanya said that every syllable of the Bhagavatam contains Krishna Prema. So, because it is Krishna, it's different parts of Krishna, and Krishna is revealing himself in this way. So here we have this chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, glorifying the Bhagavatam. Sutta Goswami, of course, the speaker of the Bhagavatam, as he's winding up his presentation of the Srimad Bhagavatam, he's taking the time to present this Bhagavat Mahatmya for our benefit. Okay, I think I probably forgot about lots of things I was thinking about saying, but that's something. Tamahara Prabhu.
Thank you very much. That was very informative. I really enjoyed, learned a lot from the class today. One thing I was wondering, Srila Prabhupada said in a couple places how the Puranas were divided into three categories according to the modes of nature, you know, six in the mode of goodness, six passion, and six ignorance. Now, I was wondering, does Jiva Goswami mention that at all in this description?
Yes,
of
that's there also. In fact, one of the arguments, before he gets to the Bhagavad, when he talks about the Puranas as authority, he says, well, which one do we accept? And he proposes, well, we could naturally say, well, we'll accept the ones that are in the mode of goodness. So then he quotes verses that describe which Puranas are in which of the modes. You know, there are three, there are six in each of the modes. Or maybe you can't exactly say that the Purana itself is in the modes, but it's for people in those particular modes. So then he said one might propose that, well, we'll just accept those that are in the mode of goodness. But then he goes beyond and he says, well, the Bhagavad Purana fulfills everything that we need, so we'll just accept the Bhagavad Purana. So yeah, he does bring out that point. In fact, there's it's interesting because I've read a different understanding of this, but it's said there's one verse which seems to say, from the Matsya Purana, that every day of Brahma is ruled or pervaded by especially one particular mode. So a particular day of Lord Brahma is more in the mode of goodness than another day of Lord Brahma. But I saw someone out saying, well, actually, the word is kalpa, which is generally a day of Brahma. But another meaning of the word kalpa is shastras. Just a shastra. So you might say, well, there are certain shastras. Anyway, I won't get into the details of the verse, but there's some controversy about whether it actually refers to. But I thought that was interesting when I read that, the different days of Brahma. Because what Gopi Puranadana Prabhu, in his presentation of this Tapasandarbha, he accepts that it's different days of Brahma, and that these different Puranas, therefore they're prominent in those days. If the day of Brahma is more in the mode of ignorance, then for example the Garuda Purana may be more glorified. You may have a Garuda Purana Mahatmya in that particular day of Brahma. So in any case, yes, these three divisions are there, but the Bhagavatam, it transcends. It's beyond. This is a whole discussion in a later Sandarbha of Jiva Goswami, the difference between sattva and shuddha sattva. This is in the Bhagavad Purana, there's a whole discussion of that. So the Bhagavad Purana is not in sattva guna, it's in shuddha sattva. Transcendental to even the so in that sense it's beyond the other Puranas. I think I mentioned before in my last class how that Vyasadeva wrote the 18 Puranas, then he wrote the Mahabharata, and then he wrote the Srimad Bhagavatam that we have. That there are two, you might say, two versions of the. Of course, there are many versions of the Bhagavad Purana, but he wrote a later version, more complete version, which is certainly in Shuddha Sattva, transcendental Krishna himself. Prangovinda Prabhu?
I thought you read in the purport that Sutta Goswami added, intervened, Etechangso Kalapamsa was not there. I mean, was there, but
no.
Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam, he added? I misunderstood.
I don't think that's what it meant by the word adds.
Can you read
it? He added to his list. He said, that's the idea. Well, I'll read it again. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out that in the first canto, third chapter of this work, after Sutta Goswami lists the incarnations of Godhead, he adds the special phrase, Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. So after the list, then he's adding, in other words, he's saying more things. So one of the additional things, he's saying is Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam.
Isn't like Jiva Goswami Pad gave that sloka is the Paribhasya?
Yeah,
like
that's the Paribhasya Sutra. That means everything else. In fact, he uses that often in his other sandarbhas to, if there's some controversy, he says, well, this settles the controversy. Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. This is the final word. This is the trump card. Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. That's the most important verse. And the Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam, of course, runs through all of the sandarbhas. And another one that's extremely important, especially for the first three, and you could say maybe the four sandarbhas, is Vedanti tat tattva vidas tattvam yajnanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavan iti shabdyate. That there are three aspects to the absolute truth. This verse is discussed extensively in the first few. In fact, in the there are two sections of the Tattva Sandarbha, the Pramana section and the Prameya section. So the Pramana section is what we're discussing. How do you understand what is the evidence? What is our evidence for what we're going to understand, Brahman? And then he begins the Prameya section, where he begins describing what is the absolute truth. And he begins by Vyasadeva's meditation. This is also an extremely important part of Jiva Goswami's presentation. After Vyasadeva heard, After Vyasadeva heard from Narada Muni, then of course he went into meditation, and then what did he see? He saw Krishna, he saw Maya, and he saw the Jiva. So this is an extremely important part of Jiva Goswami's presentation, especially in the Paramatma Sandarbha. So that scene, you can say, is very important. Because Vyasadeva, this was his, the Bhagavatam is in a sense his realization. He saw the absolute truth in meditation. Now one point that comes out in Tattva Sandarbha, and Gopi Pranadan Prabhu comments on this extensively, or several times he mentions it, is that the Vedas, they exist eternally. Just like, you know, in the New Age movement, they have this idea of the Akashic Records, or something like that, you know. That they, if you have certain sight, then you can read these records that are up there in the ether somehow or something like that. So we have this in a sense that the Vedas exist eternally, and the certain Vedas, they're named, or Upanishads, they're named after certain rishis, just like the Shvetashvatara Upanishad, which is an important one for us. The Shvetashvatara Upanishad, so it was spoken by the sage Shvetashvatara Rishi. So it's named after him, but it's not that he just spoke it, it came out of his own mind. He was reading it. He has access to the Vedas. They're, the rishis, they're called seers. So they can see in their meditation the eternal Vedas, and then they transmit them to us. This is the example Gopi Pranadan Prabhu gives. He says they're just like transmission towers. Just like today we have all over the place, mobile phone towers, right? So they're getting a signal from a satellite and transmitting it to our phones or whatever. So the rishis are like that. They're receiving the knowledge that's there eternally with Krishna, and they're transmitting it to us. So anyway, I thought this is kind of an interesting point. So similarly, even the Puranas are also existing eternally, and it's different seers, they're presenting them. Now one thing, I think I might have mentioned this before, it's just like Vyasadeva, he compiles the Vedas. So this happens in every Dwapara Yuga. There's a different Vyasadeva who condenses the Vedas, the one Veda, into different parts. And previous to Vyasadeva, Parashara was one of those persons who did that. But there's a verse in the, I think it must be in the Vishnu Purana, because the Vishnu Purana is spoken by Parashara Muni to, I think to Maitreya, at least part of his book. Maitreya is one of his disciples. So there he describes that there are, in every Dwapara Yuga, there's a different Vyasadeva who compiles the Vedas. But in this, the 28th cycle of this, you know, our particular Vyasadeva, he is Bhagavan Narayan himself. He is God himself. He's not just a Shaktiavesh avatar, whereas others are Shaktiavesh. They're imbued with the Shakti to do this work. But Vyasadeva is actually God himself, Narayan himself, at this point has made. So actually, this Tattva Sandarbha, I find it very interesting. There's a lot of really interesting points. I've read it several times.
I want to have a clear on that also, that what I'm hearing from you. That sloka that Prabhupada emphasized, bhakti yogena manasi sammak pranita amale apasya purusha krishna mayayata dapasya. So that's after. It was not in the original, I mean, how do I say original?
This is a tricky previous part. Yeah, how this works. And of course, Vyasadeva, Gopi Pranadan Prabhu mentions in one of his commentaries on Tattva Sandarbha that the Bhagavatam that we have is the same one that Vyasadeva spoke to Shukadeva Goswami, and the same one that Shukadeva Goswami spoke to Maharaj Parikshit, word for word, he says. So when I read this, I say, wait a minute, how can that be? I mean, he's Shukadeva Goswami is talking about Shukadeva Goswami arriving, and you try to figure it out, it just doesn't seem to make any sense. But that's the way he presents it. And there are verses that seem to indicate that. So it's kind of inconceivable. Because there's a verse in the 12th canto that kind of summarizes how Krishna spoke to Brahma, and Brahma spoke to Vyasa, and Vyasa spoke to Narada, and Narada spoke to Shukadeva, and Shukadeva spoke to Sutta, and now Sutta is speaking to the sages of Naimisharanya, and they're all speaking the Bhagavatam. So I remember I was saying this in class, and then I was kind of thinking in the back of my mind, well, did Vyasadeva speak the Bhagavatam? Did Narada speak the Bhagavatam to Vyasadeva? Because we don't hear that. We just hear him telling Vyasadeva to write about Krishna, basically to write the Bhagavatam. But there are places where it's actually said that he taught him the Bhagavatam. So at least, I don't know if Jiva Goswami makes this point, but Gopi Puranadandapu makes the point that he taught him the same Bhagavatam that we're hearing now. But there, of course, there are also different versions, because when Lord Brahma heard four verses from Krishna, and then he spoke them to Narada, which is part of the second canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's something like 180 verses or 150 verses, something like that. So that's also the Bhagavatam. So he took the four-verse version and expanded it into 100-some-odd verses, which is still the Bhagavatam. And then Narada spoke something to Vyasadeva, I don't know exactly what. And then Vyasadeva apparently spoke an 18,000-verse Bhagavatam, or he taught 18,000-verse Bhagavatam to Shukadeva Goswami, which he spoke, and which Sutta Goswami also related. Now, it's interesting because, of course, Narada and Vyasadeva are there and they're listening. And I think Jiva Goswami points this out, that they're, because it's spoken by Shukadeva, because of his potency, they're learning something new. even though they both know the Bhagavatam and they both spoke in the Bhagavatam, when they hear Shukadeva Goswami say it, they're getting new realizations. They're tasting more nectar by hearing Shukadeva Goswami speak it. So this is, you can say it's alive, that's why, because it's Krishna. There's this verse in the ninth canto that talks about Krishna. It says his face is like a festival. So when you go to a festival, there's so many things going on. Just like a kid at a fair or a festival, just senses are going wild because there's so many things. You know, the cotton candy's over here and this is over here. So you look at someone's face, you think, well, there's a nose, there's the eyes, there's cheeks. What can be going on? But the Bhagavatam says, no, it's ever new, it's ever fresh. The gopis never, they complain, oh, I missed something because I blinked. I must have missed something happening in Krishna's face. So we think, wow, it's just a face. No, but it's Krishna's face. So Krishna's not ordinary. That's one reason we'd say his form is transcendental. Don't think that's why he's called Arupa, the absolute truth. Brahman is Arupa. He doesn't have a form. What does that mean? Well, don't think it's a form like your form. That's what arupa means. No, it's like, if you think form, when you hear the word form, then you only, you know, like that, what's that story about the cow that was burned once, so every time there was any kind of light or something, yeah, the cow would run away because, oh, another fire. So, oh, it's just a form. That's why people have such a hard time, you know, they see Krishna. Well, that can't be God. How could God? He's just got a body just like ours. But no, his face is a festival. So the Bhagavatam also, it's like that. It's ever fresh. At every moment, the devotees get something new. So, of course, it's also inconceivable. Jiva Goswami, this is one of the points that he makes. Unless you accept that God is inconceivable, then you'll never be able to really accept him. He has to be inconceivable because he's everything. He's outside of everything and inside of everything at the same time. What Mother Yashoda saw, he's in Krishna's mouth, but I'm in there too. But how can I be in his mouth? Mother Yashoda, how can I be in his mouth? I'm out here. Dharmaraj Prabhu.
You touch on a point which I always had a question about. You mentioned about the Bhagavad Puran as part of the 18... mm-hmm. Puranas, and then about Srimad Bhagavatam as what was spoken after.
Yeah.
Can you describe a little bit the difference between?
I don't know any differences. All I know that this point is made because both things are said. Because the Mahabharata was written after the 18 Puranas were written, so this is mentioned in the scripture. So we have to accept that that's true. There are 18 Puranas in the Mahabharata. But in the Bhagavad Purana that we study, Srimad Bhagavatam, Narada, he praises Vyasadeva. He says, you've written this wonderful work, Mahabharata. A couple of places, at least, the Mahabharata is mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam that we have. So that means, well, there must be a different Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is, you might say this is inference at work here. You have to infer that there must be different, two different versions. One version of the Bhagavatam that appeared in the original 18, and then the other one that we're familiar with today. What the difference is, I don't know. I haven't seen any explanation of what the difference might be between them.
Yeah, because also that the 18 Puranas, they are divided into three categories, the mode of passion, ignorance, and goodness. So, and the Srimad Bhagavatam is considered transcendental. So probably.
Yeah, you might think, well, maybe that Bhagavatam is only in Sattva, not Shuddha Sattva, but
I don't know.
That would be speculation. I haven't heard. That thought came to my mind too, but I don't think that's stated anywhere.
I have one question.
Oh, Trivikram has his hand up.
We were saying that if we can actually quote a verse about karma. But karma has been touched in other scriptures, like even the Mahabharata, Vyasadeva spoke about karma. He says that our karma is registered on our subtle body, and it follows us like our shadow. And then also, I guess after death, Dhamraj can read your karma and decide your fate, you know? So. And in the Garuda Purana...
Yeah, there is more information, I know, in the Garuda Purana and other places. But still, there comes a point where I find myself, I always have another question. Well, what about this? And I find it hard to... And if you ask a devotee, what about this? They'll probably come up with an answer. But if you ask them, well, how do you know that? Well, that's just my understanding. we sometimes say that. That's my understanding. I don't have a verse to explain it, but that's how I understand it. You know? So, my point in saying was that we also kind of tend to use inference, but maybe we're not on quite steady, you know, steady ground. That's why we sometimes may disagree with each other on certain things, because we can't nail it down always, everything that we say. So maybe we have to be a little humble sometimes. We don't know everything. I know the more I read, the less I know. The more questions I have, because there's so much. There's just so much. Just like I was explaining, how all these books, how many verses we were hearing today? 400,000 verses. Imagine. And there's a billion of them on Brahmaloka. He knows them all by heart. Of course, he doesn't have to write them down. Even Pushkar doesn't know 400,000 verses. Yeah, Prabhupada.
I was just curious, Ramanujacharya, he emphasized Vishnu Puran over, even though those verses like Sarva Vedanta Saram Hi, Srimad Bhagavatam Ishvata. I wonder, like, is there a commentary, like, what does he feel when he read this? But he emphasized Vishnu Puran, but he read this Sarva Vedanta Saram Hi, Srimad Bhagavatam Ishvata. What do you think?
Like, he might... So how does he rationalize this? He puts more emphasis. He takes Vishnu Purana as supreme, Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya also. Because they're worshippers, they see Narayan as they see Krishna as an incarnation of as Narayan's coming as Krishna. So they might say that, well, of course the Bhagavatam's it's about Krishna, it's gonna glorify Krishna, it's gonna glorify the Bhagavatam. Just like if you read the Garuda Purana, you may also find that the Garuda Purana is spoken by Garuda, I think. And one thing about these different names, sometimes they're about the person being glorified, and sometimes they refer to the person speaking. So the Garuda Purana, while Garuda may say that Vishnu is supreme, and this book is supreme, and anyone who reads this book is going to live eternally in the spiritual world, and so on, and you don't need to read any other book, and... We find that kind of thing. I'm trying to remember, there's a verse, I memorize it. Anyway, I think it's from the Vishnu Purana that says, Purana agamastam tam eva hi devatam, you know that verse? Siddhante punareka eva bhagavan Vishnu sambastagama vyapareshu vivechina vyatikaram niteshu nishchiyate. So that verse says that throughout the different Puranas, you'll find the different demigods are glorified. But the verse is, so they let them speak like that. They can go on speaking kalpa until the end of the kalpa if they want to. But as far as I'm concerned, siddhante punareka eva, the real siddhanta, the real truth is Bhagavan Vishnu samastagama. That Vishnu is the absolute truth, is Bhagavan. Yapareshu vivechana vyatikaram niteshu nishchiyate. This is the solid conclusion. So this is a verse from the Vishnu Purana. So the Vishnu Purana is telling you, you know, there are so many others that are glorified as the Supreme, but the Vishnu Purana says it's Bhagavan Vishnu. So Mastagama, he says even the Agamas, they all say that Vishnu is Supreme. So of course we also say that, as opposed to Shaivites who say that Shiva is Supreme. But we go beyond, we say of course Krishna, that's why this verse is so important, this line, Krishna is tu Bhagavan Swayam. So it is true that Vishnu is Supreme, but somehow, well, you can say it's their bhava. So with their bhava, they can reconcile something that seems contradictory. But this is one way they might explain it. Yeah, the Garuda Purana says, or the Vishnu Purana says that Vishnu is supreme. And the Bhagavad Purana, which is about Krishna, says that it is supreme and Krishna is supreme. But we understand, our understanding is, that and they can also quote many, there's a big section actually in the Laghu Bhagavatamrita. And it's quoted directly from Ramanujacharya, at least taking the points from him, where he's establishing the superiority of Lord Vishnu. And then from there, Rupa Goswami goes on to explain how Krishna's beyond even. Okay, he's established the supremacy of Vishnu, so we'll establish how Krishna is even above Vishnu. So he's done all that work for us, I'd say, establishing the supremacy of Vishnu, but we'll establish with Bhagavad Purana, and other places also, hidden here and there in the Vedas, the supremacy of Krishna.
Just the last, because Radhastami is coming, and I was thinking about it last couple of days, that in entire Bhagavatam, the most prominent verse is Anayaradita Nunam Bhagavan Harishra, everybody quote. But not really directly emphasizing Radharani's Tattva or Swarup or Leela. But in Vishnu Puran, those famous verses of Radharani's glory is there, but none of them become Radha Bhakta. What is your view? I mean, why is like that? It's like a more confident, even Vishnu Puran, the famous verse, Sattam Sattam Puna Sattam Sattam Eva Puna Puna Bina Radha Prasadena Mat Prasadat Na Vidyate. Oh my God, if I hear this, I would become a devotee.
Parashara, he's not on the level of Shukadeva, so he could speak about Radharani without fainting, but Shukadeva, of course, he had to continue, so he couldn't continue.
Okay, that's
All right, we're past time. Let's stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.